Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, the go-home show for this Sunday's Big Survivor Series event at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to talk to us live. Of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Last night's Monday Night Raw really had some interesting, let's put it that way, had some interesting bits sandwiched in between the matches, some of which were not very good matches, let's be honest, but some very interesting things happened. So let's start from the beginning. Monday Night Raw finally opens with an actual match. I'm not sure when the last time that happened was, but it opens with the tag team division basically being in the ring, and they are going to have a battle royal to determine who's going to be the captains of the tag team Survivor Series team this Sunday. This lasts just a matter of seconds before Braun Strowman comes out and once again, second time he's done it, once again dismantles the entire Raw tag team division. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, what do you expect? They have to make him look strong after suffering a pretty much of a squash match loss against Braun Strowman. I mean, against Brock Lesnar. Okay, well, then why did he suffer a squash match loss against Brock Lesnar? Why did you paint yourself in that corner? Because now what you've done is you've made Braun Strowman look as if an entire tag team division cannot defend themselves. And if they cannot defend themselves, professional fighters from one man, why are they in the tag team division? Well, your tag team division now is impotent. With the exception of the Authors of Pain, your tag team division is now basically impotent. You have proven them to be a group of people who cannot even take on one man. Can't even defend themselves from one man. Horrible mistake. Horrible mistake. I realize you're trying to make Braun Strowman an indestructible monster again, but you're the ones who destroyed that myth to begin with. So why are you solving your own problems? That's the issue I have. Why create that problem to begin with, and now you've taken it out on your tag team division? So Braun Strowman says, I'm not going anywhere until Baron Corbin gets out here, because since he's a general manager, he must be totally missing in action backstage. And I'm just going to sit here and disrupt Raw, to which Stephanie McMahon's music hits. Now, to be honest with you, Stephanie McMahon tries in her own way to sell Braun Strowman. But she still comes up looking like she's not afraid of Braun Strowman. She's willing to get in his face. She's willing to tell him, I'm the boss of the show. At some point, we have to understand that if you're going to make a guy an indestructible, unpredictable monster who will do anything at any time to anyone, Stephanie McMahon probably should say, I'm not going out there. Or if she does, I mean, she literally should be not in the ring with him, but outside the ring. She should show at least a little bit of fear. She did it for Ronda in a minute. I know people are going to say, well, she knows Braun Strowman won't hit a woman or blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Braun Strowman's supposed to be a monster. Either he is or he isn't. Can't have it both ways. So she gets in the ring and she basically says, we need you on the same page at Survivor Series. We can't have SmackDown, my brother's team, win. I need you to be on the same page as us. And then afterwards, I'll give you whatever you want. Strowman says he wants another shot at Brock Lesnar. God knows why. It's not like he almost won. And he wants a shot at Baron Corbin with the stipulations being ones that he will choose. Stephanie says, done and done, as long as you agree to be on the Survivor Series team. This brings out Ronda Rousey, who gets to hear Becky Lynch chants, as we predicted she would. When she says, Becky Lynch doesn't understand, she's out here saying she's going to break my arm, and that's pissing me off. She don't know what she's talking about. I'm going to show her how to really break an arm. Or maybe I don't have to wait. Of course, Baron Corbin's already out. I should have mentioned that. Corbin comes out and tries to settle things down. And Ronda Rousey comes out. Corbin ends up getting flipped by Ronda Rousey. Yeah, look, it wasn't bad enough that Braun Strowman destroys the entire Raw tag team division. But now we have Braun Strowman, who I guess is very controllable. See, that's the problem. He has the guy he wants in the ring. There's Baron Corbin. And instead of just taking his head off, he says, no, I'll wait because Stephanie promised me a title shot. And Stephanie promised me I get to have you in a match. I thought it didn't matter to Braun Strowman. You're trying to play Braun Strowman two ways, and you're going to have to decide which way you want to play him. Either he's a calculating athlete who wants the gold and is willing to make concessions to get to the top and play ball with the authority to get to the top, or he's a mindless monster who just knows crush, kill, destroy. Because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Baron Corbin's a foot away from him. And yes, it looks like he's going to hit him. And Corbin, you know, gets his way out of that or whatever. The bottom line of the situation is, I think you've done Braun Strowman a great disservice. I think you've done the tag team division of the WWE's Raw division a great disservice. And it begins to feel as though you're not really sure who Braun Strowman is. And that's a problem, because what led to Braun Strowman being so popular is the fans knew exactly what he was. He was a guy who didn't give a damn about anything except getting his hands on people and beating the hell out of them. Period. I mean, to Braun Strowman, a belt should mean pretty much nothing. Honestly, shouldn't mean much. Not here for that. Suddenly he is. And I don't see that as being a positive, Mike. I think they've done Strowman a good amount of damage. And in the process, last night, they did the tag team division completely in.
Right. And look, you look at the other tag team division in the other brand, and you yep. see the two best tag teams in the world look like they're on the same page. I mean, it's looking like that SmackDown tag team division is going to win that. Whoever is in that match for Raw, they're going to get flat out dominated. But as far as you're absolutely right with Strowman. They don't know what they want to do with him. At one point, we said the only guy, this show said the only guy that should be able to control Strowman was Bray Wyatt. That was on
right.
the show. I remember that distinctly. And
yep.
then they changed it. They split him apart and they changed it. And like you said, we knew what we were going to get. At one point, we knew exactly what we were going to get. He didn't give a damn. And we knew that when his music hit, somebody was going to beat up, or something was going to get broken, or something was going to get tipped over, you know, something
right.
like that, you know.
Yep.
But we knew, and that's what made the fans like him so much, because they knew what he was all about, and they said, okay, we know this guy, we get this guy, and we understand what he's going to do, and he doesn't care about anything else, you know.
Right, his motivations were very simple, just destroy shit. And fans were picking up on that, and fans liked it. The new Braun Strowman, Todd, the watered-down version of Braun Strowman, is starting to lose gas, in my opinion.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this Braun Strowman is like a watered-down Kane. Like, I remember when Kane first came up, and he was indestructible and like a demon type, but now they're doing the same thing to Braun Strowman as it's watered down.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is a little bit like the Kane thing. I understand you can't make him totally indestructible. I understand he has to be pinned. You can't go through your lifetime being, you know, invincible. But you don't have to change your motivations. Braun Strowman should have been a guy who didn't talk a lot. And when he did talk, it was just who he's going to destroy. This whole deal with calculating, okay, I won't let my temper get the best of me. I'll let Baron Corbin stare me dead in the face and not destroy him. That's not what a monster does, though. See, a monster's instinct is, I don't care. I don't care about the championship. I don't care about Raw. I don't care about Stephanie McMahon. I don't care about my job. I don't care about anything except destroying people I don't like. That's not what Strowman did. So we got a problem with that, in my opinion. And, of course, the tag team division really suffered. We then get Tamina Snuka versus Ember Moon. And I got to tell you, folks, I don't know what the situation is with Tamina Snuka. I don't know whether the WWE just feels, well, I don't know if they think they owe it to the family. I don't know what the hell's going on. But Tamina Snuka is someone who, she was fine as a bodyguard. She was fine as a woman who occasionally stepped into the ring. You putting her over against Ember Moon is absurd. I know you're trying to do this thing where Nia Jax and Tamina Snuka are a team of some sort, a faction. Okay. Why? There was never any reason. So now you're a faction, and you're going to throw people like Ember Moon and some of the talented people to the wolves. Because of it. Makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. Match wasn't that good. Ember Moon had to noticeably slow down. And, you know, this is not at all what we were promised with the Women's Revolution. And if you're somebody like Ember Moon, who has a great deal of talent, and you're jobbing out to Tamina Snuka, I want you to think about something for a minute. Technically, they used Ember Moon to get over Tamina Snuka, and they're using, I guess, Tamina Snuka to get over Nia Jax, who's really just being set up to lose to Ronda Rousey. Wow. So Ember Moon, talk about the low person on the totem pole. She's the setup for the setup for the setup. And it's a shame because she's very talented, Mike. That it's a shame to see that, really.
Yeah, it's a shame to do that, really. And the only thing I can think is at one point they wanted a Tamina Snuka, Nia Jax kind of feudish type thing. And how they gonna get to that with these two women being together? I don't know.
I don't know anybody that wants to see it, Mike. Who wants to see that? I don't want to see that. You want to talk about a terrible match? I do not want to see that. Anyway, Drew McIntyre comes out, and now I guess Dolph Ziggler's his sidekick. And he cuts a really, really good promo, I thought, about how Kurt Angle really didn't deserve any respect, and he runs the show now, and this is exactly what he said he was going to do, and there's too many people in the back who worries about other people's feelings and stuff like that, and to hell with them. And out comes Finn Balor. Now, Finn Balor is not one of my favorite wrestlers, but this is a good spot for Finn Balor. He was attacked by Drew McIntyre last week. He's much, much, much smaller than Drew McIntyre, yet he's willing to stand up to him. This is a good spot for him. This is a good spot for him to get a face pop. Drew McIntyre has got himself over as a heel, even to the point of kind of insulting Dolph Ziggler by saying, I wouldn't lower myself to fight Finn Balor. You'd have to get by somebody like Dolph first, and then maybe I'll lower my standards, which technically is an insult to Dolph Ziggler, right? I mean, it's basically saying, well, you can fight him because your standards are lower than mine. So I guess there's going to be trouble there eventually. That seems to be where that's heading. But Drew did a really, really good job of getting himself over. And when you get yourself over as a heel, it only furthers the face pop. It only furthers when that guy sticks his head out of the curtain, the fans are going to pop. And Finn Balor got a nice pop. And he actually cut a halfway decent promo, saying we're sick of you coming out here and talking about this and talking about that and just shut up already. If you're going to do something, do it. So it ends up being a match between Finn Balor and Dolph Ziggler, but Drew McIntyre starts the thing off by giving him that gigantic headbutt, which looks great, by the way. Looks like it kills you. Looks like it destroys you. And we cut to commercial, and we're back. The match is underway. This is, we don't know it at the time, but this is going to be the best match of the night. And it really was a good match. And I'm thinking to myself, well, one of two things is going to happen. Either Drew McIntyre is going to cost Finn Balor this match, which is likely. Or Drew McIntyre is accidentally going to cost Dolph Ziggler the match, which may be equally likely. Or Dolph is just going to flat out lose, which I hope he doesn't, because then it looks like he's just a setup guy for Drew McIntyre. But that's what happens. And while it was a great match, I would have rather seen another branch on this tree. Meaning, if Dolph has to lose, at least make it look like, well, you didn't do me any favors. I know you screwed up something, or you distracted me in some way. So we could further this tension between Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. Instead, we pretty much just get a clean pin. Yeah, Drew McIntyre was involved in it to an extent, but nothing that's going to say this wasn't a clean win. This was a cheap victory. McIntyre looks upset. It looks like we're heading for a feud with that. If you're a Finn Balor fan, at least he has something to do, but you can rest assured he's not beating Drew McIntyre. So it's one of those bittersweet things where you say, well, one of my favorite wrestlers has a feud. He's not winning the feud, but he has it. So, Mike, this was probably the match of the night. I wish the outcome had been a little different.
I wish the outcome would have been a little bit different. But my question is, why do they keep every time Finn Balor comes to the ring and does a match, they refer to the fact that he was the first Universal Champion, and he never got, basically referring to the fact that he never got his rematch. And I was, why do they keep doing that when they know good, full, and well that he's never going to get that rematch?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Roman Reigns gave it to him, I think, at one point. I don't know whether it got ripped off. I don't remember. But I know Roman saying, you're right, you never got it. You're going to get it tonight. I don't know what ended up happening there. But bottom line of the situation, it was the match of the night for sure. But it does undermine Dolph Ziggler a little bit, and I just wish Drew McIntyre had been the guy that screwed it up, so Dolph Ziggler could have said, you didn't do any favors there, pal, and we could have saw that tension sort of rise a little bit more. We have Seth Rollins come out, do an interview with Corey Graves, to which he really hyped me up for Nakamura. I'm really into this match. I don't know why, but I just think Seth Rollins and Nakamura is going to tear the house down Sunday. Can't wait to see it. And he says, but I want to know what's going on with the Dean Ambrose thing. I have to know, I have to know, I have to know. And we then get Dean Ambrose on the Titantron. It looks like he's in a parking garage sitting on top of a sports car with a trash can fire. And Dean Ambrose gives a very odd and certainly not an adequate explanation, where he says, well, there was a time in my life when I thought the Shield made me stronger, thought wearing this vest made me stronger. I thought being in the pack made me stronger. But then I come to realize it's made me weaker because I always have to watch your backs. And I don't get it. Yeah, you always have to watch their backs, but then they watch yours. So this is a very poor explanation. And if this is what they wrote for Dean Ambrose, the reason you decided to turn is because you feel you're stronger without the shield. That is a really, really, really poor explanation. I'm sorry. And it's not an adequate. It's not one fans are going to swallow at all. Not at all. Because it doesn't make any sense. And then he says, I'll burn it down. He throws his vest into the fire. And while Dean Ambrose does this perfectly fine, he's very good at what he does, it's not a good enough explanation. You know, I'm waiting for him to say, you had it right all along, Seth. Everything you said when you turned on us and we were all in shock and we didn't know what the hell was going on and you rose straight to the top and did all these things, I kept saying to myself, that's not the way. That's not the way. Because in the end, the fans will never forgive you. The fans will never respect you. The fans will you'll never earn back what you lost, Seth. And I was wrong. Because here's all these fans chanting your name, buying your t-shirts, doing whatever the hell you want to do. You haven't changed. You're the same exact person. You just think this is a better opportunity for you right now. So I'm just going from the Seth Rollins playbook, and I have no idea why you're mad at me. You're the one who taught me. Said it's no, I'm weaker. I'm weaker without two guys backing me up. Okay, but that's not true. So that's a horrible explanation. So I don't know, Mike. I mean, I didn't think that if that's what was written for him, I don't like it.
Right. I don't like it what is written for. But we've been saying that for how long, for how many of the performers that we didn't like what the writers have written for him. I mean, it's not just he carried it off decently. He's a pro at that. And as he was carrying it off, I was thinking to myself, they better be careful with this. I know they want him as a heel, but that was not a heel. That was not a heel promo. That was more of a gray area promo. That was a more of a Stone Cold Steve Austin-ish type promo, and I don't think they want him to be that yet. Yeah.
I agree with you, and then I was shocked when they let him say, maybe one of these days I'm going to regret this. Maybe I do regret it a little bit, what I did to my brothers. I'm saying, oh, let's not go down this path. Let's not go down this path already. And then he brings Roman into it and says, I always had to watch Roman's back. And I really thought they were going to go for the, I'm not mad at Roman Reigns. I have nothing against Roman Reigns. It's you. I really thought that's what this was going to be, but it's not. So, okay. For what it was, it's okay. I don't know why Seth Rollins at the end, just because he burns his vest, runs backstage like he's going to find him. Who cares? So he burnt his vest. What do you think he was going to do? Keep it? So I thought that was a little silly, but overall, not so bad. We get the tag team battle royal finally. I don't know why we need a team captain from this. They've already been beaten up by Braun Strowman. They've all been beaten up by Braun Strowman, and they're going to go ahead and take on the SmackDown guys, right? But Chad Gable and Bobby Roode win. I'm not going to talk about it. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. The tag team division in Raw is irrelevant for the most part. What I'm going to talk about is Bobby Lashley and Elias, because this was a really good segment. And this goes to show you a few things. One, Bobby Lashley is so much better with Lio Rush. Lio Rush comes out and he runs his mouth and they do this whole, he's going to pose and he's going to show you his ass and the whole nine yards. And then Elias, again, if a bad guy comes out and he can get the heat a la Drew McIntyre, when the good guy sticks his head out the curtain, they get a bigger pop. That's why I keep telling you that there is a difference between the faces and the heels have got to be heels to get the faces over. Drew McIntyre was a heel, a real bad heel Monday, and Finn Balor benefited. Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush specifically were annoying, obnoxious heels. And Elias benefited. Now, Elias was hilarious. He called Child Protective Services and said, Bobby Lashley's in the ring with a kid. And he's showing him his ass. And I don't know, maybe, how old are you, kid? Well, he can't be more than 10. Very funny stuff. Elias has that part down. Now, the match itself, somebody put a bug in Elias's ear and told him, you got to pace yourself a little better. You can't be Mr. Rest Hold. Because even though it was a short match, Elias was much more in motion, much more exciting. One thing I've noticed, though, and if you guys are attentive, you'll notice it too. At the end of the match, where Leo Rush hit under the ring, and as Elias is trying to climb back in the ring at the count of nine, Leo Rush holds his leg, a la Bobby Heenan, who did that on a couple occasions and some others. He doesn't get it back into the ring, so Bobby Lashley is now goes on to the Survivor Series team. Elias was clearly out of breath. As he stood there waiting to attack Leo Rush again, he was huffing and puffing. He was huffing and puffing from a four-minute match. That's a problem. And the reason this is a problem is Elias is very muscular. And when you're that muscular, it is, in fact, much harder for your body to get that oxygen. It requires more oxygen. And that's why big muscle-bound MMA fighters run out of gas quick, because it takes a lot of oxygen to fuel those muscles. And the cardio becomes weaker. I truly think if I were the WWE, I would ask Elias to drop about 10, 15 pounds. He'd still be very muscular. Just tell him, look, let's not work so much on looking like Superman. Let's just work on this character. Because you're going to need stamina. You're going to need to be in there 10, 15 minutes and put on a great match. He went a long way this week. It was better, but it's short. See? And when a guy like Bobby Lashley isn't out of breath, and you are, then you may be too muscular for your frame. It's just an observation I made, because Elias is very slow sometimes in the ring. He's slow to get up. He tends to breathe heavy a lot. And obviously he's in shape. I mean, he's in muscular shape, but the cardio is suffering. And if he's going to be this big face, and he looks like he's going to be, because the fans really popped, he needs to put on these matches. He needs to put on better matches. He needs to do it right away. Mike, have you noticed that about Elias, that he tends to huff and puff a bit after 2-3 minutes?
That's right. And you know, it's one of those things now. Now, you know, we've seen people come back and come back from different things and have been heavier. You know, most recently, you know, Ambrose, he comes back now. Ambrose is a bit different. I would think that Ambrose and what you call and Elias are about the same height, you know. But Ambrose is at two. I would think that Ambrose and Elias are about the same height and weight, but Ambrose has got better cardio at that weight than Elias has, you know.
Well, look at the difference in muscularity, though, Mike. Look at the difference in the muscularity. Elias is thick. Dean Ambrose is just he put on a few pounds, but he's not. You know, there's no difference. There's no comparison in the physique. No comparison at all. I mean, Elias is that far from Bobby Lashley. He's closer to Bobby Lashley than he is Dean Ambrose. As far as his physique, he's jacked. He's totally jacked. And it's absolutely weighing on him. And he doesn't need to be that jacked to get over. Roman Reigns was much more jacked. And that's the reason that he dropped. Go back and watch old Roman Reigns matches with the Shield and look at the size of his arms comparatively to the size of his arms a month ago. Totally different. Brock Lesnar dropped a lot. We know why he dropped. Jinder Mahal eased up a little bit. Speaking of which, we'll talk about him in a minute, but Todd, the Elias promo in the beginning calling CPS on Bobby Lashley was really funny.
Oh, I laughed my ass off when he said that. He looks like he's 10 years old and everything, and I could have stopped laughing at that skit, Ed. And what Elias did, and the match was okay itself, but the skit was hilarious.
Yeah, there's no question. Look, Elias has got the mic skills. He's got the charisma. He's got the talent. I mean, he went down and even played a little bit of guitar for the fans to give him a pop. He's got that solid, and that's why I'm saying he could get by with what he does right now in the ring. He could get by. But that's why I'm not picking on him when I say he needs to work on his cardio and put on better matches. I'm really saying this because he could have the world by the ass. Elias could be the next. We always ask, who's the next Stone Cold? Who's the next Rock? Who's the next whatever? Elias could be. He has that much charisma. He could be. But he's not putting on their quality type of matches. He's just not right now. And he needs to take that very seriously because the WWE won't give him an unlimited opportunity. They'll give him a few matches, and then if they say, he's not really living up in the ring to what we thought, he's going to be dropping to Apollo Crews. So I hope that Elias takes it very seriously. He was better this week than last week, but this was a much shorter match. And they did let him destroy Leo Rush a bit, and he got a pop for that. But I think fans would have liked to have seen him in the Survivor Series. I really do. Ruby Riott comes out, gives a half-hearted apology. The problem with Ruby Riott, even though she's good on the mic, is we knew from the very moment she tried so hard to make it sound real, but she went too far and too long. Sometimes when you go too far and too long, we already know you're going to say, I'm not sorry. So that's what ended up happening. Natty comes out, gets beat up. Looks like the feud's happening there. Aside from that, for a go-home show, you know, the matches were subpar. We had a couple of weird things, like Ronda Rousey backstage. She does a very good promo as far as saying, yeah, Becky Lynch is the typical millennial, and then she runs down a litany list of, you're the man, yeah, you're the typical millennial man with a hair and a bun and eating asparagus tips and everything that offends you has to go and blah, 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 blah. And that's a really good speech to give to someone that fits that. Everything Ronda Rousey said, I take a look at certain political pundits and say that fits them. But it really doesn't fit Becky Lynch at all. Because Becky Lynch clawed and fought her way to the top and sacrificed everything to be at the top. So, and I don't remember Becky Lynch saying she was offended by having Ronda Rousey say she was better than her. As a matter of fact, it was Ronda Rousey who came out to the ring and said, I'm getting pissed that you keep saying you're going to tear my arm off. Well, it sounds like you're the one that's offended. So it was a great speech, but it didn't work. Because fans are listening to it saying, yeah, but that's not Becky Lynch. That would be great if it was the Bellas. Or that would be great if it was, you know, Alexa Bliss. Becky Lynch, because it doesn't fit Becky Lynch. Nobody ever said about Stone Cold Steve Austin, oh, you're a typical millennial, you know, sitting around having your tofu sandwich and everything that offends you is horrible and you need a safe space. Nobody said that. And she's much more like Stone Cold Steve Austin. So I was confused to why any writer would write that and say that's good for Becky Lynch, for you to say about Becky Lynch, because it doesn't fit Becky Lynch at all. At the end of it, Tamina Snuka and Nia Jax come over, and it's a horror show because we know this is coming and nobody wants to see it. And I'm going to say something that's probably going to sound cruel, but it came to my mind, and I'm going to say it anyway, because, hey, sometimes Ronda Rousey's facial expressions remind me of the Grinch. Watch her face very carefully, and then watch the Grinch when it comes up on Christmas. Very similar facial expressions to the Grinch. Not sure what the hell that's going on there. But, I mean, she must have had about 47 facial expressions in 30 seconds during that interview, and when Nia and Tamina came over, and I was like, okay, a little bit of overacting. She can remember the lines, and she can rattle them off pretty good now. But again, I don't think those lines fit with Becky Lynch. And that's a problem, Mike, because the fans ain't getting behind her.
Right. I mean, they would fit more with somebody like, I don't know, CM Punk. You know, somebody like that. I mean, straight edge aside, eating tofu dogs and all that crap that he would do. That would fit him. It doesn't fit Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch, we've said it before, Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know, she's the last kicker. She is basically the female version of Sheamus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Didn't fit at all. Now, Alexa Bliss, speaking of her, comes out, and every time she comes out, I feel so sorry for her because of this whole nonsense. You can tell she wants to be in the ring, and hopefully, I know, she's tweeted she will be, but I think it's very much up in the air. She comes out with her Survivor Series team, which is Nia Jax, Tamina Snuka, and Mickey James. She said she went ahead and sent Natty home because Natty was distraught. And said, this is the greatest team I could possibly compile. Really? Well, that doesn't say much about your women's division. Tamina Snuka's on this team. What did Tamina Snuka do to be on this team? Who has Mickey James beat to be on this team? Nia Jax, maybe. Even Natty, maybe. The women's division over there is getting a little ragged thanks to Ronda. And she says, but I need one more member, so we're going to have a match, and the winner gets to be on the team. And to my shock, it's Sasha and Bayley. This is the way they're going to give you Sasha and Bayley? The match everybody's wanted for I don't know how long. This is the way that they're going to give it to you. And then they don't really give it to you, which I guess is good, because halfway through it, the other Survivor Series team members attack. And Alexa Bliss reveals it's just a ruse because her real last member is Ruby Riott, which makes zero sense. She says, I want a cohesive team. I want a team that will work together. You think Natty and Ruby Riott's going to work together? You think that's a good idea? So if you're the captain of the team, you say, yeah, that's what I want. I want infighting. That's ludicrous. It's a ludicrous thing. Absolutely ludicrous. So I was very disappointed with that because I thought maybe they're going to bring up somebody from NXT or there's going to be a, you know, last minute call up somewhere or return or something. It's going to be Ruby Riott, who I like Ruby Riott. She's a very good wrestler. But the pick doesn't make any sense. It makes Alexa Bliss look stupid. And the one thing that Alexa Bliss is not supposed to be is stupid. She's supposed to be very cunning and clever. Well, that's not cunning and clever. That's dumb. You have teammates who won't get along. That's dumb. And I mean really don't get along. It's one thing to say, well, Drew McIntyre and Finn Balor don't like each other, but they'll work together. No, no. This is somebody who broke your dead father's sunglasses and laughed about it, and then said the only reason he wore them so he didn't have to look at you, and then beat her up. You think that's a good idea to have that person on your team? That makes Alexa Bliss look about as stupid as a girl can get. And that's a shame. By the way, this was the feature, but only because after this match, backstage we find out Becky Lynch is here. And she's got Ronda Rousey in the disarmor. And Ronda Rousey's screaming for bloody murder. Becky Lynch is saying everybody's tough till the man shows up. The one line that Ronda Rousey had that was good and she should have stuck with it instead of all this millennial stuff is she said, we did not work as women to get to this point where we're hosting our own pay-per-views and we have our own division and we're you know, build at the top of the card to call ourselves men. That was a great line. And she should have stuck with that. But anyway, then we find out, hey, wait, the whole Raw Women's or SmackDown Women's Division is here, and they're jumping the girls in the ring. Even Charlotte Flair is there with Becky Lynch, which was a little weird. But still. And when you're going right, folks, when everything in your career is going right, like it is for Becky Lynch, it's impossible for you to do wrong. Even when you do something wrong or something wrong happens to you, it turns out to be right. And somehow, in the fracas, Becky Lynch got her nose busted, wide open, blood everywhere. Camera's trying not to focus on it. But the sight of Becky Lynch leading the charge in, beating up the Raw women, bloodied and battered with the blood dripping off of her face and still smiling, that I can't tell you. I cannot tell you how much that just did for her career. That is actually a plus. It's a plus. The picture's all over the internet today. And you're looking at a bloody Becky Lynch going, damn, man. She is badass. I mean, when you're going right, even mistakes seem like they're on purpose. You couldn't have wrote that better. A total accident becomes a major social media phenomenon now. With the look at Becky Lynch, man. She's badass. Here she is, busted wide open, still, you know, beat up Ronda Rousey with a chair. Don't give a damn. And I'm like, wow. When it's going right, Mike, it's going right. And it's going right for Becky Lynch.
Oh, wow. I mean, the only thing you can say is a little bit strange is they're making her look awfully, awfully strong. And when they make somebody look strong like that, she's not going to win that match. You know? That's the only little thing I can say about that. But other than that, yeah, you're right. And look, it's not just that. When she has the chair and they're screaming one more time.
Yeah.
And it's all for Becky Lynch. You got
yep.
something.
It's very seldom when I say I don't think she can do any wrong. But at this point, even mistakes, even getting her nose busted, which whether it's her fault or somebody else's fault, I don't know. I didn't see when it happened. But when even getting your nose busted adds to your mystique, you're on a hot streak. You just can't do any wrong. And right now, Becky Lynch cannot do any wrong. And the fans are not going to boo her. And Ronda Rousey better accept it, and she better understand it. Ronda's coming off as a major heel here. Saying you went to the circus and tried to learn how to be a clown, and then you went tried to be a stewardess, and I was tapping people out when you were serving drinks. That shouldn't be. That's not what a face says. If Ronda Rousey really wanted to go in this as a face, my presumption is that she would say, the Becky Lynch that I see now is the Becky Lynch that always should have been. This is going to be a real challenge for me. She's really got a fire underneath her ass, and she is at the top of her game. And I can't wait for the challenge. Now, her attitude I'm not thrilled with. She said some things I don't agree with. But as far as her athleticism and her being at the top of her game, there's nobody better right now. And that's who I came here to fight. The very, very top. It should be Becky Lynch who's saying, well, I wish I could say I was fighting the people at the very, very top, but I'm fighting protected little princesses who, you know, get a ton of money for just showing up and smiling. But no, Ronda Rousey has taken the, I'm going to attack, attack, attack. And it's coming off making Becky Lynch look better and better and better and better, and Ronda looking like she's a sorehead. Again, how can Ronda Rousey stand in a ring and say, oh, everything offends you. Did I offend you by saying I was going to beat you? wait a minute. You just got finished saying I'm offended that she's in here saying she's going to break my arm. So it doesn't really make that much sense. But still, the sight of Becky Lynch and the Raw Women's Division invading, Becky Lynch bloodied and battered and smiling, that's a very good optic going home to Survivor Series. That's a very good optic. And I'll tell you, when, like I said, when you're on a roll, you're on a roll. And I've not seen a wrestler in the last 3 years be on a roll like Becky Lynch. She's just on a roll. If they handle her right, which I have no confidence they will, by the way, but if they handle her right, you wanted this women's division to be, you know, something special, main event type thing, you got it. You got it. You need another one or two of them to be like Becky Lynch in their own way, not exactly like her, but in their own way, have that same focus and energy and charisma. But man, the fans are into Becky Lynch. And with everything that happened on Raw last night, all I heard this morning was, man, do you see Becky Lynch all bloodied? And wasn't that freaking cool? And I'm like, man, she's just hit the gold mine. The girl's just hit the gold mine. She'll take that bloody nose every day for the type of gold mine she's hit. They're at a point now where I'll wait till Sunday to give my prediction, but they're at a point now where I'm not sure they can afford to have Becky Lynch lose this match. And I mean that. I think the intention was absolutely that Becky Lynch is going to lose this match. But I don't know now. They're at a point where they may have to reconsider this. Because they've caught lightning in a bottle, and unless they're absolutely stupid, they're not going to cork that bottle back up. So we'll see. Overall, what was Raw this week for a go-home show? Well, we didn't get a ton of good matches. We got the Brock Lesnar thing we should talk about, I guess. I was trying to avoid it, but let's talk about it for a minute. Brock Lesnar comes out, and to add insult to injury, for poor Jinder Mahal, Jinder Mahal is booked to come out and basically kind of allude to what really happened with Brock Lesnar, and that is, well, I was just about getting ready to fight the Beast, and I didn't have my focus totally on AJ Styles, and he got over on me. So don't underestimate AJ Styles. Do not underestimate it. And I can to help you with that. And I'm thinking to myself, what this really means, the translation is, I was on my way to fight, and he didn't want to fight me. I had to lose to AJ Styles because of it, and now the poor bastard has to get in here to get destroyed. Him and his whole team, destroyed by Brock Lesnar. Left a bad taste in my mouth. I know you can't have Lesnar get a beat down or anything else prior to this. But why does poor Jinder Mahal have to come out, knowing the guy didn't even want to sell to him or fight to him, but oh boy, you got to sell to him, don't you? You got to make him look like $1 million. And I don't know whether it's just me, but I think fans are really now honestly getting sick of Brock Lesnar to the point they're not even giving him that big of a reaction. It's just like, yeah, whatever. And here's poor AJ Styles fixing to probably lose the second time. Because I cannot see a scenario by which AJ Styles beats Brock Lesnar. I just can't see one. So this one left a bad taste in my mouth, Todd, because Jinder Mahal's had his problems here with Brock Lesnar, and to have to go in there and just kind of eat one, not good.
Well, I remember last year that was supposed to be the match Mahal and Lesnar, champion, the WWE champion versus the Universal champion at the time. And
yep.
Well, like you said, it's with Lesnar. It's like, I don't want to face this guy. I want to face another guy as the SmackDown champion. I just don't like that guy to wrestle with.
He didn't want to sell to him. He didn't want to sell to him. Derek in the chat room said Paul Heyman did not use the word spoiler. No, he didn't. But what are you going to do, Derek? You're going to have AJ Styles pin Brock Lesnar, and then what? then what happens? The next guy who fights him for the belt is saying, well, you know, he's on a losing streak. That doesn't sound right. The WWE, unfortunately, I think, is setting up this scenario. And I hope I'm wrong. But in a way, I hope I'm right, because it would be good for Roman. They're banking on Roman Reigns' recovery within a year, maybe. And they're saying to themselves, if we can keep Brock Lesnar around as an undefeated champion, when Roman Reigns comes back, he's going to get a hero's welcome, which he is going to get a hero's welcome, and he deserves to get a hero's welcome. And we're finally going to get that moment where Roman Reigns, the whole crowd chanting Roman, 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 is going to pin Brock Lesnar, and the whole arena is going to erupt and carry him off on his shoulders, because that's what they're hoping. Now, I don't know. I have heard no medical reports. I know he's just undergone treatment, and his last tweet was saying, you know, just starting treatment, it's going to be a while before we can even discuss how long it's going to be. But we're not going to get privy to that. I guarantee you we're not. WWE's going to be privy to that, and we're probably just going to get a surprise appearance one of these days if, you know, knock on wood, everything is okay with Roman Reigns. And if it's not, and they say, well, Roman's going to be longer than we thought, then down the road they can give it to somebody else. But to have AJ Styles be the cog in the wheel right now, I don't know. Now, if you're AJ Styles, you don't want to lose twice. And it wouldn't be impossible for something to happen, such as Braun Strowman to come out and destroy Brock Lesnar. That could happen. But I don't think there's any scenario by which Brock Lesnar just loses without there being a storyline for the next match involved. So we'll see. I mean, Derek's right in one sense. The more Paul talked, the more I said something's going to happen. Because shit on AJ like that twice. But then we're talking about Brock Lesnar, so they very well may shit on AJ like that twice. And between you and me and the wall, AJ Styles doesn't care. AJ Styles knows this business inside out, backwards and forwards, upside down. And if he's told, well, yeah, that's just one of those things, dude, you know. He's like, oh, well, whatever, I don't care. He doesn't care. Because he knows real fans know he's better than Brock Lesnar in the ring, in the wrestling ring. And he knows in real life he can't beat up Brock Lesnar. So both ways, AJ's probably cool with it. The fans who aren't cool with it. So overall, the Brock Lesnar appearance, underwhelming. Ronda Rousey getting Becky Lynch chants was pretty funny. Braun Strowman destroying the whole entire Raw Tag Team division was sad. Even Bobby Roode, you know, who deserves better than this. Bobby Roode, see, you can say what you want about Bobby Roode. You can say he's boring. You can say he lost a little bit of his luster. You can say whatever you want about Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode is an accomplished professional wrestler. And to have to just get slapped around like a third-rate rookie by Braun Strowman made me sad. The whole Stephanie thing was just ridiculous. The highlights, of course, were Drew McIntyre's really, really, really good promo and a very good match between Finn Balor and Dolph Ziggler. And Elias calling Child Protective Services on Bobby Lashley was really, really good. Fans wanted to see Elias in that Survivor Series match, so I can tell you that. And a word of caution to the WWE. Yes, Elias didn't lose, technically. And when he did, he lost by countout, and only because of Leo Rush. But don't have Elias lose very much. Because if you go back to Elias being 50-50 or even under 50-50, those big chance of Elias are going to fade. Now's the time. He's caught on fire. Now is the time to run with him. Don't have him lose very much. You know what the old WWE would have done? I'll tell you what the old WWE would have done. The old WWE would have said, okay, well, Elias lost or whatever, but then something happened, and one of our guys on our team can no longer compete, and it probably should have been Lashley because he's injured. And Elias has to step in last minute, and Elias would have went damn near the whole way. Where fans would have said, man, Elias gave the performance of his lifetime there, and now he's a solid, you know, top echelon face. The new WWE says, eh, keep Elias out of it. We don't want to see him get pinned, and he can't win it. Okay, well, but you do want to see him get counted out against Bobby Lashley in a four-minute match. Having Elias in there and lose, but put on a great, great, great fight would have been a whole lot better than losing in 4 minutes to Bobby Lashley by countout for his career. So all in all, it was kind of a middling show. Some of the things that I liked, I liked. What I do like is this. They are now giving us characters. Bobby Lashley and Lio Rush are strong characters. Elias is a strong character. Dean Ambrose is a strong character. Drew McIntyre is a strong character. They're weakening some, in my opinion, like Braun Strowman and the whole tag team division. But they are giving us qualified heels, and they are giving us qualified faces. Because right up until about 3 weeks ago, they weren't doing that. So I'm still going to give this a relatively high grade. It wasn't the best Raw I've ever seen. As a go-home show, it kind of worked because of the Becky Lynch thing. So I'm going to give it a B+. There are things about it that I think were self-destructive, but there were more things about it that I think were good, Mike. What do you think?
I'm gonna give it a B, a flat B, and I agree with you. And look, that first off, the Becky Lynch thing, that sold that show. That I mean, what can you say? I mean,
you can't say
she
much.
Comes in. I mean, she comes in. She comes off looking extremely strong. Number one, number two. That like you said, that optic of her broken nose, as they're going off the air, is something to behold. And number three, one bad thing though is, did you catch the reaction of Paul Heyman and what he as he was talking? There was basically no reaction. There was a point in time when we were hanging on every single word that Paul Heyman said. Not anymore.
No, because it's gotten old, and it's the same thing over and over and over again. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with you. I got to go with a B plus.
Look, I'll tell you something. Mike's absolutely right about one thing. The optic of a bloody Becky Lynch leading her troops to battle and wiping out the Raw Women's Division saved this show. I mean, it literally saved this show. I was looking toward like a C to a C minus, and all of a sudden, I, for the first time in a very long time, when Raw went off the air, I was like, damn, that was pretty cool. That's been a while. So, yeah, and it happens with the women's division, which is a real shock. So, yeah, Becky Lynch is on fire, and she can do no wrong. And the WWE has to think very carefully about whether they want what they want her to do on Sunday. We'll be back on Sunday with a Survivor Series pre-show. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.